Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Welcome.
It's another spooky episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And this is the month where we talk about spooky board games because it's October.
Spooktober.
And everybody knows if you have a podcast that reviews things, the month of October, those things have to be spooky.
It's law. We looked it up.
So this week we're reviewing a game that doesn't really have many spooky elements to it, but has a spooky name, at least.
Spooky theme. And
a spooky-ish theme. Matthew, what game is that?
We are talking about Nevermore, designed by Kurt Covert and published by Smirk and Dagger Games in 2015.
All right, Nevermore. And just to remind the listeners, this is a regularly scheduled weekly episode where we will choose one game and talk about how to play it, how to win at it, and some of the design that goes into the game. So, Nevermore. To give a short description on what Nevermore is about. In Nevermore, players attempt to collect victory points or eliminate each other by drafting suits of cards. Each turn starts with players being dealt 5 cards. The players then draft hands by keeping some of their cards and passing others until they are left with a drafted hand of 5 cards. Then the cards are resolved suit by suit, and whoever drafted the most of a given suit gets to perform a special action. Swords deal damage, hearts heal damage, cups gain victory points, and light draws you useful light magic cards. The fifth suit, Ravens, will cancel out the cards from the other suits in your hand, but having Ravens left over at the end of a turn allows you to draw powerful dark magic cards. If you take too much damage, you aren't out of the game yet. Instead, you are turned into a Raven, who can no longer win unless they perform certain actions to transform back into a human. You win when you are the last non-crow standing, or you collect 5 victory points, or if you are a Raven that manages to eliminate all of the other humans.
Yeah.
So that's a short description of what Nevermore is about. It's a drafting game with suits. You draft suits to perform actions, and you're trying to either gain victory points or eliminate other players from the game. So let's get a little more in detail on how the game is played. Right. By the way, if you couldn't tell, the theme of this game is... I mean, the name comes from... Edgar Allan Poe, you know, the famous Raven poem.
Quoth the Raven, Nevermore.
But the gameplay and certain other elements of the game, I guess, don't really come from that poem per se. I don't really know if they come from other Poe poetry. Or
I know some of the suits tales. are like tarot card suits,
mm-hmm.
Like yeah, Arcana, swords and cups.
Yes. Yeah, I could see that. So there's a spooky air to the game, at least.
Sort of mysticism.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of dark colors and purples to this.
Getting pecked to death.
In this game. There is the pecking to death, the death in general. Being transformed into a raven isn't the best. Anyways, yeah. So that's our reasoning for talking about it this month. It's a little spooky in some regards.
It has a little bit of a spooky coloring to it, you know, the art.
Yeah.
But yeah. So how to play. So this is a drafting game.
Right. Like we said, there are 5 suits, swords, cups, hearts, light, I guess, and ravens. And all of those suits are on cards that are shuffled into a big deck. And then every turn, every player is dealt 5 cards from that deck to make their starting hand. And then you draft those cards by passing them around and keeping other cards until you are left with 5, not necessarily new cards, but 5 cards that you have selected or been passed.
Right. So
describe how that drafting works.
So every round you either pass to the left or to the right. And the first time you pass 3 cards and keep 2. The next time you pass 2 cards and keep 3. And then the last time you pass 1 card and keep 4. Now, unlike many other drafting games, you can pass cards you've already kept in previous hands of that draft. Mm-hmm. So if I were to keep 2 swords and pass 3 other cards, I could still pass those 2 swords if something better comes up.
Right.
And then once everybody has finished drafting that way, the suits are revealed in order, These are like little tiles for each of the suits that get shuffled up face down before every round.
Right. There are four tiles to represent the four non-Raven suits. For the first hand, they have a very specific order that they go in, which is swords, hearts, light magic, and then cups. But then every turn after the first turn, they get shuffled around and reordered in a different way. So it could go light magic, hearts, cups, swords, or, you know, any other
right
order that those four can be in.
Right.
And then, you don't know what they are in until after you have drafted all your cards.
Right. Then one by one, these suits get revealed and players will reveal how many of each card of each suit they have. So like when swords gets revealed, all the players reveal what swords they have in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever has the highest amount of a card or tied for highest amount of a suit, they take an effect based on that number minus the second highest amount of that suit.
Right.
So for swords, it is dealing damage to another player. So you deal damage based on the difference between the highest number and the second highest. For hearts, it is healing that much. For cups, it is gaining that many victory points. And for light, it is drawing that many light magic cards. Now, right. The ravens, during these four other suits, you can play the ravens along with one card of that suit to get rid of it. And you have to get rid of cards with ravens that you have. So
yes.
If you have like two ravens and three hearts, then you'll have to get rid of two of those hearts with two of the ravens.
Right. When you play a raven with a suit, it cancels out a card of that suit.
Right.
So if you have less ravens than you have non-ravens, then you're going to end up canceling two of your cards out and then only having one card left to try and gain an effect from.
Right.
Or one. However, card. If you draft more ravens than non-ravens, at the end, once all four suits have been revealed and all of the cards have been played, whoever still has ravens left in their hand can then play them to draw dark magic cards.
Right. Now, there is one more thing, which is before any of those suits are revealed, if a player has five ravens in hand, then what is it called? There's a special action they take.
It's called a conspiracy of raven. And if a player, so it says if a player holds five ravens in their final drafted hand, they get a huge benefit. At the end of the hand, at the end of the hand, they get the huge benefit. So they skip to the end phase and no other player gets to play their cards for that turn.
So it's not really at the end of the phase, but either way.
Well, at the end of the turn, then, the player holding five ravens immediately deals one damage to all other players, draws one shadow magic card, and gains one victory point.
Right. Of course, that's only if you have five or more ravens.
And at the end of the turn, however many shadow magic cards you draw is based on whoever has the most ravens minus whoever has the second most ravens.
Right.
Getting one victory point is pretty big. Dealing one damage to all players is nice, but not too big. I think the big part of having a conspiracy of ravens is that nobody else gets to play out their cards.
Right.
But it's very difficult to draft five ravens in this game.
Right. So when you reduce somebody's health to zero, they become a raven.
Yes.
And then do you get a victory point when that happens if you're the one who killed them? I know that was something we were unsure about when we played.
I believe it does. I will look this up really quick while you talk about what a raven can do.
Yeah. So a raven, they can't win the game by normal means, so they can't win by like victory points or anything. They can draw light magic cards from playing the light suit. And they can still draw shadow magic by playing the raven suit. But the other suits, the cups, swords, and hearts, have special effects. Mm-hmm. If a raven player has the highest in that suit, instead of taking that effect, they deal one to whoever else had cards in that suit? Or was it second highest?
Sorry, it's whoever has the second highest takes one damage.
Right. They peck at them.
Mm-hmm. And so then, swords, hearts, and cups no longer have their effect with ravens. They merely will peck the player who drafted the second most as long as they drafted the most.
Right.
By the way, I looked it up, and yes, if you reduce another player to zero health, they are transformed into a raven, and you gain one victory point.
Right.
And also, there's another rule associated with swords. This comes from the same section of the rulebook, that if you can inflict four or more damage with swords, you can choose to instead do one damage to all players and gain two victory points.
Oh, okay.
And that's the only way you can split damage. Okay. So if you have the most swords, you have to deal all of the damage that you are allowed to deal to just one player.
Okay. But then, so a Raven player does have a way to come back to life as a regular player.
Yes. At the end of a draft, or I think it's once a draft is done and players have their hands together. Let me check what the timing is on this. Okay, at the end of a draft, if a Raven player has collected five of a kind of any suit, or they have one card from each suit, then they transform back into a human at maximum health. Or sorry, at one less than maximum health.
Right. And maximum health is slightly different depending on how many players there are in the game.
Yes. It's five for a 3-4 player game, four for a 5-6 player game.
And then is the number of victory points that you need to win still the same for each of those, or is that also different?
I believe that's the same for everybody. It's just five victory points.
Okay, yeah. I think that's about it for the rules.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember.
I guess the last thing to say is that the light magic and dark magic cards will always say when they can be resolved.
Right.
And usually that'll either be like before cards have been drafted, before suits have resolved, or after suits have resolved.
Yeah.
So those are like the three typical timings for a card. And those will be important based on the card's effect. So for example, there might be a shadow magic card that says play this card before cards have been drafted. Nobody drafts cards this round. Everybody just keeps the cards they're dealt. Or right. It might say play this card after cards have been drafted. Everyone passes the hand they drafted to the left.
Right. I was just going to say there are quite a few amount of cards that just act as a card of a given suit.
Yeah, in the
magic decks. Yeah.
And also in general, it should be noted that the light magic cards are less powerful than the shadow magic cards because they're easier to obtain.
Right.
And everyone starts with one shadow magic card at the beginning of the game. And I just looked it up for clarity. It is six victory points to win.
Oh, okay.
All right. So with that said, let's get a little deeper into strategy with this game.
Yes.
I think it's from what we saw in the games we played, light magic is probably the least powerful suit of the four main suits.
Right.
We saw a couple turns where multiple light magic cards were resolved by the same player and they still ended up not doing great for that turn.
Yeah.
Shadow magics are good, but the most important suits are cups and swords.
Of course.
Because that's how you win.
Yeah.
And the hearts are only important if you're close to death.
Yeah.
Or you're approaching a point where you're close to death. Because sometimes, like, you might be down to one health, so you'll draft a lot of hearts. But if the suits resolve with the swords going before the hearts, then it doesn't matter how many hearts you drafted. You're still going to get knocked out if someone chooses to target you with their swords.
Yeah.
So swords and cups are how you win. So they're the more important suits, but that means that they're also more contested with the other players in the game. This is a drafting game, so most of the strategy just kind of comes from reading the draft.
Right.
Well, how do you do that in this game?
Yeah, so one thing about this game is obviously, like, you don't want to pass too many of the same thing, of course. You'd ideally want to hold on to multiples that you get. But, like, if you are past, like, one light magic and a sword, and so you have two light magics and a sword and something else, and then you get past another sword, it might be worth it to pass the light magic then because you're getting past a better suit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of one thing I'm trying to say is, like, it's okay to pass multiples if you're getting passed multiple cards over the course of the draft of, like, a better suit.
Yeah. The first thing that you're passed can tell you a lot in this game.
Yeah.
And it's what you should probably pay most attention to.
Right.
Is what you got passed in your first hand. Because in your opening hand, you only get to keep two cards. So that's really not a lot in this game. You really, like, are starting to do something when you have three of a card or right. three of a suit. Like, it's really easy to get two, and it's not difficult to get three.
Yeah.
So by keeping two cards, you're not really guaranteeing anything. You're not even guaranteeing that you're going to get the effect of those two cards.
Right. So think of it like, if everybody can keep two cards that they won, it's very likely that everybody would tie if just they only had those two cards, because, you know, two would be the highest then.
Yeah.
Do you get sort of what I mean? Like, it's like you generally can only actually make a difference by having three or more of a card of a suit.
Right. Because two is guaranteed.
Yeah.
From the opening hand. So,
yeah.
You know, two is the number you're trying to beat. In order to get the effect.
If there is a two of that I would be really comfortable with keeping, it would actually be two ravens.
Okay.
So one thing you can do with ravens is time them. So if you have two ravens in your opening hand, you can keep them and then pass them the next time. And so, like, you're kind of trying to make sure you're offloading them to the person to your left. Also, it's nice, though, because if you keep two ravens in your first hand, then you might be able to get a five of a kind for that conspiracy of ravens.
Yeah. As long as you just get past one raven from the person to, you know, the person feeding you cards,
then you get shadow magic.
Then you get shadow magic, which is very good.
Right.
And in the other case, if you pass three cards that aren't ravens, keep two ravens, and then the next hand, or the three cards you're passed does not include a raven, when you pass those two ravens, then that means that you just kind of canceled out anything that you passed them that was good for them.
Yeah. Ravens,
they have
I think
to keep one of those ravens.
Pretty strong. Even in the first pass, it's not too bad to keep ravens. So, like, uh-huh. pass two cards that aren't ravens. I mean, I guess you're still forced to keep a raven. I don't know. I think it's also different. This game is pretty player count dependent.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause in, like, a three-player game, you have to worry about wheeling. Whereas in any other player count, you don't have to worry about cards coming back to you. Right. Just like what the people to your left or right will actually have.
Right. In a game with more than three players, you can't really predict what you're being passed based
outside
on
of,
what you see.
Yeah, outside of
hand.
Maybe like, oh yeah, based on what you see in your own hand. Unless the deck is out of cards and you're good at card counting.
Yes, I was going to mention that there is, like, some amount of card counting, so that's not entirely true that you can't predict what is in the pool to draft.
I think it's 12 of each suit.
Whatever it is, it's an even count. So if it comes from the same deck, and you don't shuffle every time, you deal a hand to every player from the deck, and then those cards go into a discard pile, and you deal a new hand from the deck until that deck runs out, then you shuffle the discard pile and build a new deck.
Right.
So that means that by the end of, you know, some turns, you'll be down to, like, the last few cards in the deck, and you can make some assumptions of what is going to be in there just based on, you know, what suits have been the most prevalent in previous hands.
Right. So, like, if people haven't been getting a whole lot of swords, or, like, swords have really only been done more than once, or, like, you know, if people have been doing only a few damage with swords for the past two rounds, you can bet there'll be a frequency of swords in the next two.
Yeah, or whatever. And that means that, you know, you can try and four swords in your draft, or you can, if you don't get dealt many swords in the round that you think there's going to be a lot of swords, then you probably want to get something else, like hearts.
Yeah.
Or at least hate draft some swords so that somebody isn't getting all of them.
Right. If you do get past Ravens, then hate drafting is definitely an option. I think it's pretty easy to hate draft just based on looking at the table. Like, the people with a lot of victory points are probably going to want cups or swords. The people with lower health don't probably want swords. Unless somebody is in, like, killing distance. Or, you know, if they're in low enough health to deal damage to and kill. Yeah.
Although that only matters for when you are passing to the person who you are hate drafting from.
Right.
That's so true. So if they're on another like side of the table, then you're actually helping them by keeping the suit that they want in a way, because having it and then having to play it with the Raven means that you're canceling it out, which means
they have a higher number.
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess it might come out in the wash in some player counts, but in others, like if you had passed that cup to the person to your left and then they had played the cup, then that's one against the player across the table who's trying to win from victory points this turn.
I guess that's true.
Versus keeping it, you would have to cancel it out with a Raven. And so, it's 1 point for them.
Cups might be the one you want to avoid, because that's the most swingy one with multiples, because that's the one where you can outright win if you get enough without having to worry about other players. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah. I think my logic stands, because it's like if they have three cups and you have one cup and you have the option of keeping it with your hand of Ravens or passing it, then that's either them getting 3 points because they get three and then you have the one cup that gets canceled out, or they get two because they play three and then the person to your, you know, to beside you that you're feeding cards to plays that cup.
That makes sense.
In that case, I guess the way to hate draft if you're going for a Ravens hand is to keep that card for the suit that you think that they want until the last card is passed, and then pass it. Hate drafting means like forcing the person next to you to have it in their hand.
Right. Let's see. If you're the Raven, do you think it's worth going for those revitalization hands?
Yes.
It's easier to get the one of each suit, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because people are more likely to pass one ofs.
Yeah, I think they're both difficult, but definitely the one of each kind is less difficult. The chance where you get it is when the cards that you keep from your starting hand are ones that your person passing you cards aren't interested in, which is impossible to guess. So you just, unless they're going for, you know, a cups victory or something.
Unless you can tell, like they have a lot of victory points
or they're low on health and they might want to do some healing, then you could say like, okay, I'll keep the heart then, or I'll keep the cups because they won't be passing me those. They'll just be passing me the other things like swords and ravens and hearts.
Right.
But yeah, it's worth it to go for those. I'd say the only case in which it's worth it to go for the other option, which is to like try and peck a whole bunch, is if people are very close to dead.
Right.
And by when I say people, I mean like all the other players.
Right.
Because you only win if you knock everybody out in one fell swoop and be, you know, I mean, if you knock all the remaining humans out in one fell swoop, then you become the human and win and from last one standing. But if everybody except one other human survives your pecs, then that human just wins. So you just help them win from the damage that you deal.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's something I wanted to say. Oh, light magic is better for Ravens than it is for other players. So if you're going for the five of a kind, I think your best bet is to go for light magic, because a lot of the light magic cards are suits of other cards.
Yeah.
And those can help contribute to you getting five of a kind or getting one of every kind.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to get a five of a kind, you could try to do light magic just to make your chances better next round.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, go for the light magic because it is the least valuable suit for non-Ravens. So it's not going to be drafted very heavily if you're like one of the only Ravens at the table. And even if it doesn't work out, you still get the benefit, and that benefit contributes to the condition of becoming a human again.
Yeah.
So it just kind of, it's kind of like a chain of strategy, a chain of decisions that feed into one another that end up being good for the Raven.
Yeah. All right. I don't have any other strategy notes.
Yeah. Otherwise, just go for the victory. That's like all I have to say. Go for the defeat. Defeat people, knocking people out and turning them into Ravens is valuable in this game because it means that they can't deal large amounts of damage to you and they can't win anymore.
Yeah.
So if you have the choice between like reducing someone's health to a lower number but not eliminating them versus eliminating another player, you should pretty much always just eliminate the other player.
I mean, it does give you a victory point as well.
And yeah, it does give you a victory point. So it's good either way. Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that's about it for strategy for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the design of the game.
All right. So one of the most like unique things about this game is its drafting method. In most drafting games, you keep cards, but you can't pass them later on. So the size of the hand is decreasing, the hand that you're picking from. But in this game, you're picking from hands. Yeah. In this game, you're picking from the same hand, and you can just jump ship whenever you want, if you want to. So, one thing, I did a bit of research, and apparently this game was based off of a sort of like a fun poker variant that the designer liked, where you draft a poker hand, which does explain some things, like why you keep two cards and why it's a five-card hand. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so you don't really need a reason to do a unique take on a mechanic. You know, sometimes the drive of a game or like the point of a game could be just a new take on a mechanic. But like, I think Nevermore does a good job in implementing it without like it just being kind of there.
Uh-huh.
If you want to take a new mechanic and make it new and weird, you'd hope you at least make a good use of it. Right. So one thing is that the mechanics of Nevermore, like what each suit does, it directly compares your hands to opponents. But there's only like a few suits, which for one thing, like I said, is good because it does let you jump ship. If you kept cards and couldn't pass them later, then picking two cards of the same suit and then not getting any more would be just like really feels bad, you know, like you wasted that turn. So like, because it's kind of a binary, you either get something or nothing from any of the suits, being able to pass any of the cards in your hand does help keep that from being, you know, kind of like a helpless feeling. It means that you always have a way out.
Yeah.
It also does let you time the whole Raven thing better, which is having time or having bombs in your hand can be bad for drafting the other way, because it could just be like, you know, the last cards that are passed at any time would be Ravens.
Yeah.
And this game uses the Ravens, and, you know, there is some benefit to having them. But otherwise,
yeah, it is nice every time a game has rewards for their risks.
Right. But like picking a card like that, you know, if you couldn't get rid of the Ravens in the same drafting round, picking one would be very, very high risk compared to the reward. So by, you know, letting you pass other cards, it lets you kind of play around with this element during the draft. You can pick cards to pass them later, which you don't see that often. The risk
versus reward balance is nice in this game.
Right. One other thing is that since the hands are small and you're passing more cards at once typically from like the hand, I don't really know if it's good to say what I say, but no, so since the hands are small and you're passing like, you know, three cards at the first time then two at the second time, you're more aware of the cards that you're passing. Because, like, you're passing three out of five. That's pretty easy to keep track of.
That was the last strategy point that I forgot to make, was that just be aware that you're not passing your opponent or the person next to you a bunch of the same suit.
Right. Since there's only five things you can pass, and you're only passing three of those at a time, like, it lets you really quickly pay attention to what you're passing, which fits because Nevermore has like this kind of backstabby, like Court of Owls kind of atmosphere going on. And so by making a simple, you know, making the card simple and making the passing a bit more complex but also easy to keep track of lets you get into like this deduction element of drafting much quicker. Like in other drafting games, you can try to read what you're passing and what other people are passing you, but you know, in some things like Seven Wonders, it can be kind of complex to keep track of those and what the individual cards do. But this kind of turns into more of a deduction card game with a drafting mechanic rather than a drafting card game with a deduction aspect. And so I think from there it does a pretty good job. Also the fact that like it only counts the highest total of cards means that getting two of a suit is both good and bad, and that like it's not a lot, but it also means somebody else won't get a lot of value, which I think fits if you think of like, so going backwards a bit to the poker thing, it's sort of like a royal flush having two and then three, which I think is fitting that that's like a strong hand in this game. It kind of kept that sort of inspiration aspect from the start of it.
Right. If anything, having two just means that whoever gets the benefit of another suit or of that suit is really probably only going to get one.
Exactly.
Of that thing.
That's
so
what
one
I mean.
Card or one damage or one victory point.
Yeah.
Which when you're dealing with small numbers like you do in this game, when you only have five or four health or you only need six victory points to win, the difference between one and two victory points or one and two damage is pretty big.
Yeah. So this game has only a few macro choices. By macro choice, I mean like a sort of long term or larger decision you're making. In other games, this would be like what specific strategy you're pursuing during a game session or whatever, you know, what route you're taking through a game. In this case, like the macro decisions are which suits do you want to build up this drafting round? You know, what's your goal each drafting round? And since there's fewer choices for those, it's a lot easier to balance them individually, which I think just helps the rest of the game.
This game definitely benefits from the smaller scale that it has.
Yeah. There's only five suits, but the suits all do something relevant.
Yeah.
You know, we said light magic's the weakest, but it's only by a small margin, I would say.
Yeah, it could be powerful in some hands.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's just more dependent on randomness because you're shuffling and drawing cards from this light magic deck that could have any, you know, any range of effects on the game, some of them way less impactful than others.
Right.
Like you could get a light magic card that has a heart on it that you can add to your hand to have more hearts, but if you know are already very healthy, that doesn't really matter.
Right.
Versus you could have a light magic card that makes everyone pass the hand to the right, and you could just draft like a terrible hand and pass it to somebody who's close to winning and possibly steal the victory from them.
Yeah, but it's like, this is a game that's a very good example of just, like, why you don't need to have a lot of complexity. Like, this game doesn't have bloat, and it's a good case against having too much.
At least when it does get complex, it's in parts of the game where that don't come up very often during the game. It's in the light magic cards, which are, I mean, they very clearly state what they do, and pretty often you can tell why you would want to do that just from reading the card. Same with the dark magic cards, but you don't get them very often in this game. And you start with one dark magic card, so you know what that one does, and you have that option to you. But from then on, like they only come up when they get drafted.
Right.
I do enjoy how, like we talked in the strategy portion, how the light magic cards shift from being less powerful for a player who's a human to being more powerful for a raven.
Right.
And more useful for a raven.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, maybe, that it started to be useful for the thing that would be associated with Shadow.
Yeah, I guess so.
I do think it's interesting that the value mechanic.
Yeah.
You know, let me go ahead and talk about the way this uses player elimination, I guess.
Okay.
So, I mean, it doesn't have player elimination, but it does. This is another thing in that, like, behind the scenes making of the game that I read was that the designer liked the like tonal implications of player elimination, like backstabbing, you know, removing players from the game is kind of a key element of that. But obviously nowadays player elimination is a lot less common because, you know, a great way to take the fun out of a game night is to make somebody sit out for a long round because they got unlucky early in the game. And while everybody else keeps playing the game. But so what Nevermore does is it shifts the power level of the weakened player to where they're not dead, but they are weaker, but they still have like agency in the game. You know, they're still drafting for one thing. They're still getting cards. But also they can deal damage and they can still win that way, but also they can come back to life. So like, It's not like you're dead and it feels like there's no point in focusing because you can't win. And it's not like the way to win is so hard that there's no point in trying to do it. Like, there's still enough of a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, that you still have a chance of making it out there, so it still keeps you engaged.
Not to mention, you're immune to damage once you're taken out of the game.
So once you take a lot of damage, you don't have to get targeted for a while, at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like your fears melt away. And you get like a new perspective of the game.
Right.
You become like a villain, an arch villain to all the other players. Which is
fun because, yeah, all the other players who are still vying for like taking damage and getting victory points and stuff, they're kind of doing their own squabbles and you just get to peck.
Uh-huh.
I do love the flavor of like being pecked repeatedly to death. So there's this kind of like fun, flavorful roleplay element to being dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is great. It's also that it does kind of make the game end a little quicker because once one player is dead, not only does it mean that another player has victory points and that one player is knocked out, but also that the Raven will start to deal more damage every round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, with swords, normally there can only be one person that does damage just because it's whoever has the highest, maybe two, maybe three, depending on how big the group is. But every Raven is more damage per round. But it is like you said, it is like a shift in perspective, a shift in values that I think is really interesting.
Uh-huh.
Because like what you pass to the Raven also changes. It means that like killing somebody is still good, but like it does force you to play differently. So, like, depending on which way you're passing, if you're next to the Raven person, killing somebody who's next to you might be a little trickier because it forces you to pass differently and draft differently.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that killing is a bit more of like a decision, but it's still good because like it does give you points and it doesn't feel like you're wasting a damage either when you do kill somebody. Just because they can get back into the game doesn't mean it was worthless.
So there is a rule about the Raven that I don't think we mentioned. That's pretty important.
Oh.
That is that if the Raven drafts a suit and nobody else contests them, or sort of like if there's nobody else in second place, like everybody else has effectively zero of a given suit, other than Light Magic or Ravens. Then the Raven can peck all other human players.
Right. So that's sort of the main way that they would kill multiple people. If the Raven
drafts, like, hearts, and nobody else has hearts, or whoever has hearts cancels all of them out with Raven cards, then, yeah, the Raven can peck everybody. And that is how the Raven achieves the alternate win condition, which is to eliminate all other humans in one fell swoop. You have to be the only one to draft a given suit.
You know, that's interesting. The Raven doesn't want Ravens then. They want people to have to cancel out their cards because it makes them more likely to peck everybody. It's kind of a yin-yang-y aspect to that. You know, the Ravens want light and the humans want shadow.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
Although, oh yeah, yeah, it is neat. I just also wanted to point out that it is cool that the Raven has the alternate win condition available to them. Not that it's still a pretty difficult win condition to achieve compared to the other two. So things aren't easy for the Raven, but it's a nice little, like, I guess it's the thought that counts with that one. Like the Raven gets the bonus win condition.
Yeah. It's
effectively the same as the human's win condition. But yeah, it's just kind of cool that you still get it.
I do think there's this really funny element of how the way the game's paced and kind of plays out changes as more Ravens are added and more humans are removed. Mm-hmm. Because eventually you'll get to a one-on-one and the two humans are trying to like really contest with each other and heal back and get victory points. All the other Ravens are just pecking away. And it can feel like a minor inconvenience until you're at one health as the humans. But it also means that all the Ravens are kind of picking at scraps. As in, like, whoever's the last Raven to deal the last blow will win. So all the Ravens are just kind of pecking at the same people. Mm-hmm. It gives a very strong image, a very strong mental image of, you know, a murder of Ravens swooping in.
Are Ravens murders? Because I know crows are murders.
I don't know. You called them crows earlier in the discussion.
Oops.
Whoopsie.
I meant Raven.
Uh-oh.
I actually had it written down as crow in my short description.
Oh, no.
I quickly reminded myself. And I edited myself there. But
right.
I guess I failed to edit myself throughout the whole thing.
Did a little slip.
Do you have anything to say design-wise for this game? The art looks good.
Yeah, the art's good. I mean, it's typical, you know, just color coding things. Each suit has a different color that's prominent on their card, so
pink, violet, blue, and gold.
Yeah, so you know, that's the type
or
of thing,
black,
where
in the case of Ravens,
yeah, where it's easy to keep track of things as you're just glancing at a hand. Made easier because they don't have any text on them,
right?
Yeah.
And they don't need text in this game because it's pretty self-explanatory, you know, what any given suit does.
Right.
There, and the rules are very simple, so you don't really need to be reminded of what each suit exactly does.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say. This is a pretty good game at three players, which is surprising. It's always nice to see more three-player games, as in games that are, like, good at three players.
Yeah, especially because with the way the draft works, in a three-player game, you can actually wheel a card from your opening hand.
Yeah.
It's still fun to play at higher levels, too, higher counts of players.
It's always good.
Yeah. So I guess with that, that'll be the end of our discussion on the game Nevermore. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. You can hit us up with your comments and suggestions for games there. You can, if you like, you can leave a comment or follow us on any podcasting platform. We greatly appreciate that. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, to find all of our episodes tagged and organized. If you're looking for a discussion on a specific game, you can go through the tags there. And that'll track down that episode for you and directly link you to it. If you don't see any episodes for the games that you're interested in, again, hit us up on social media with those recommendations. We really appreciate when we get those recommendations, and we always try out the game. On our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. That's where we have merch with our cool logo on it. You can pick that up there. Sometimes there's sales on TeePublic, so, you know, stop by every now and then, maybe, and you might be able to get something for half off. That's it for BG Bros plugs, so let's hear it from Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack, that is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from around 12 a.m. or 12 p.m. Central Time to like 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. Central Time. I stream competitive games, a lot of fighting games, a lot of roguelites, other sort of single-player games I can play endlessly. I've been speedrunning the new ukulele game, Ukulele in the Impossible Lair, so that's been pretty fun. You can get updates on when I go live by following me on Twitter, @MattCraigGaming. And you can also get updates on when I go live through a Discord server that's in the description of that Twitch channel, where you can talk to us as well as other fans of our work. And also, speaking of other work, I write articles at the BGB website under the Episodes and Articles tab. My most recent article, I believe, is about the game Untitled Goose Game, sort of a review as well as talking about genre and some stuff like that. I talk about game design, writing, a bunch of fun stuff. And also, you can leave comments through there about the articles. And also, I want to say that at the end of this year, I'm going to be doing a strategic addendum article, where I will add any sort of strategy notes on games that we've covered but have played since the episode, because, you know, it's a learning process. And so if you do have any sort of strategy notes on any games we've covered that you want to share or talk about, feel free to message me on Twitter or message us on Facebook or message the BGB Twitter or go to that Discord server, etc.
Etc. Hit us up on your communication avenue of choice. That does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya this week.